Live to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm amazing today. This is our amazing Wednesday show.
So. It's Wednesday. That's the right day for it. Your timing, as always, is impeccable. Good day to be amazing. And, you know, we're picking right up where we left off on yesterday's show. This isn't a series. It's just a kind of a coincidence. But we talked about the code of ethics, the three laws of augmentation yesterday. And tonight we're talking about amazing augmentations and some augmentation controversies. So we're going to talk about things that are going on right now that will sooner or later, and in some cases I think quite a bit sooner, become part of the kind of public discourse about, you know, are we talking about valid changes to make to human beings? And then some of them are just plain good news. You can look at it and go, well, nobody's going to have a problem with this. Or will they? We'll get into it. But I thought I would start with this first one that you had sent to me. Is a story in Wired talking about a story we discussed last week. The headline is, China used CRISPR to fight cancer in a real live human. Big breakthrough. I guess we talked about 2 weeks ago, didn't we?
Right.
Big breakthrough occurring in China. They're using CRISPR to treat a patient with an aggressive form of lung cancer. We haven't heard or seen anything about the results of this. We don't know if it's working, but the fact that they're doing it takes CRISPR out of the theoretical, right, and puts it into the it's being used, right? Someone is actually doing something with it that's going to impact someone's life. I mean, this is the real world here. Now, the question is, and I was interested, this Wired editorial seemed to be taking a pretty hard line. The question is, are we ready for this? Can we find a way to approve of treatments like this? Is it responsible to be working on things like this? And you know where
Let's kind of explain to our audience what CRISPR is, real briefly. CRISPR is.
Go ahead.
CRISPR is an acronym, CRISPR, no E in there. It is, in the simplest terms, it is a, think of it as a word processor for DNA. It allows precise changes to DNA. In some cases, I guess, a living organism, which is what they're trying to do with this young man who has cancer of the lungs, right? So, obviously, I guess, you would like to edit the cancer either to self-destruct or to become normal tissue, and apparently that's what they're working on. Here in the United States, the FDA has not approved CRISPR for that little thing. It's still at the research level, and human trials have not been approved. What do you think on this, Phil? I mean, it seems to me that caution is warranted when you're trying something new with human beings. But, if someone is dying and wants to take a shot, my thought is, let them take the shot. It's best case scenario. They're cured, right? Worst case scenario. We learned that that's not the way to cure them. But you know what? That's one way we won't do it. And when we try it with the next person that has a serious problem,
That's right. I mean, that's to me the ethical argument is as straightforward as it can possibly be. You don't want to go saying, well, we've got CRISPR now, so nobody has to worry. We're just going to start, giving CRISPR treatments to everybody.
Hey, Phil, you won't blue eyes. Let's give you blue eyes with CRISPR. No, that's, you don't, you don't use something that's as revolutionary and as experimental as CRISPR do a vanity project. But if you're
or even to you know, try experimental things on people where there is a viable other option, right? I mean, if there's other treatments for terminal patients that at least we know the percentage of survivability, you know, at least we know what will help, then you've got I think you've got an actual ethical choice to make, because we don't know what's going to happen when you try some of these things.
So, I mean, there are patients, though, Phil, that, you know, they've written them off, you know. Well, let's make this person comfortable.
That's right.
Because
and so, to
we
me,
got
that,
nothing.
That is as clear-cut as it could be. When they don't have anything else for you, you ought to be able to do this. To me, that's the ethical argument. But there's another side of this that I'd like to mention, because I feel like I just start repeating myself because I get worked up about that side of it. But the other thing I want to point out is that this Wired piece takes a very kind of conservative, you know, well, the FDA is going to do what it does, and by and large, you know, they kind of defend the FDA and why things take a long time and all that kind of stuff, and that's all well and good. But we're talking about now the human genome effectively being an information technology. We're talking about all the rules of acceleration that apply typically to new IT-type technologies applying to these kinds of medical treatments. They need to, and when I say they, I mean the FDA, and I mean anyone who looks at these issues and tracks these issues and wants to be on top of this stuff, they need to get on top of this, okay? They need to understand that we're in a new world here, okay? That the development cycle and the, you know, the application cycle and the, you know, getting to treatment is going to be a lot faster. And there's a lot of risk here. So I'm not just saying they should rubber stamp and approve everything right away, but assuming this proves to be as valuable as we think it's going to be, assuming it proves to be as efficacious as we think it's going to be, people will start doing it in other jurisdictions, right? I mean, this will become a very widely used.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you got something that's working in China, if someone is sick in the United States and they, you know, they can't get it done here, they'll fly to Beijing. I mean,
right.
it'll happen, and. And you know, I would hope that the FDA would allow people that have no other options, that essentially, you know, let's make it comfortable type patients that are basically have been turned over to hospice, give these patients the opportunity to do things like this. So yeah, but like you say, that's ground we've covered a million times.
Well, but I think maybe that would be the first change they need to make, just as part of an overall. They've got to be faster and more responsive, or else the FDA becomes irrelevant, right? And people are going to go get, you know, there'll be a black market, a gray market for treatments that'll just pop up everywhere, and people will work, you know, under their radar or outside of the jurisdiction of the authorities. And there's all kinds of dangers around that, obviously, that we would like to avoid. So I would say that, you know, these kinds of cases provide a real opportunity for the regulators, you know, for those who want to be on, you know, keep this process under control, to realize how much they radically need to change what they do if they're going to be relevant to this. That's my point.
I think I recommended a television show to you a few weeks ago, Pure Genius. Have you had an opportunity to see?
You know, I got about halfway through the pilot and it just didn't grab me. But has it turned out to be a pretty worthwhile show?
Yeah, I think it's. It seemed like the pilot was a little slow, but each episode since then has been fascinating in one way or another. And a recent episode showed them doing remote surgery for somebody on the International Space Station. I thought that was that was pretty cool, and. But I mean, and also in a recent show, there was this case where, bioprinting for someone that had facial scarring, and the person representing the FDA says, well, this is a vanity case and not this is not life threatening, so I'm not, you know, we're not going to approve it. And you know, eventually they find a loophole and do it. Because that's the kind of show it is. It's interesting. I mean, you know, you have in this show a billionaire type like an Elon Musk or a Peter Diamantis or some I've chosen to open up an experimental hospital where everything is tried. You know, my thought is if a billionaire chooses to do it, it won't be in the United States.
Right.
Because of the FDA. It'll be someplace else where the truly desperate, ill people will end up going and to try as a last ditch to, you know, try the latest bleeding edge treatments, right? So, I think we will eventually see a hospital similar to what's seen in that television show.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. And I think the point's very well made that when something like this occurs, because I would say when, that it probably won't be in the U.S., sadly. It'll have to be in some, it'll probably be at on a ship, right?
It might be in international waters, but, I can see, some developing country somewhere where, you pay off the right bureaucrat, right? And open up a hospital. And, with the idea that we're going to show, ex developing country is at the cutting edge of, this is going to be a feather in the cap of this nation.
Sure. And as much as we believe in the rule of law and don't approve of that sort of thing, you can recognize that sometimes you can effectively get things done more quickly in that kind of system. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it the right approach, which, again, is why I would call for our system to improve itself sufficiently that that we can be the one to take advantage of this.
Yeah, you would end up with so much, you would end up with people going to places like that and end up being guinea pigs.
Right.
Because there is no, it would be no regulatory, thing to stop it. So, you have to find middle ground. The FDA needs to kind of figure out ways to accommodate experimentation with, and sort of for the truly sick. So, anyway, it's a fascinating subject, but we've got a lot of ground to cover tonight.
Well, we got several more of these. Wanted to mention really quickly as a lead in to our next augmentation, this story about Buzz Aldrin suffering from rapidly deteriorating health while he was down in the South Pole and having to be evacuated out of there. Apparently, he bounced back and he's doing fine now. So we're very happy to hear that Buzz is okay. But I guess he had fluid in his lungs, so he had a little pneumonia thing happening to him down there in Antarctica. Maybe not quite the luxury vacation that some of us are picturing for these tours of Antarctica. But anyhow, as someone pointed out, Buzz Aldrin is 86 years old. Right, and he made it to the South Pole. So he is, he the man has nothing to prove, right? Having stepped on the moon, 50 years ago, nearly. But he continues to dazzle us, right, with his just his zest for life, and his ability to take on new things. I'm in awe of Buzz Aldrin in so many ways. And,
well, I mean, what was it like? It was like just 2 years ago that he presented a very detailed plan for going to Mars.
Right.
I mean, including, Buzz is still brilliant, still active, and he is an inspiration to much younger men. So,
and he's a case for life extension, right? Because look
exactly
how awesome you can be in your 80s if you got your health and you still, are inclined to keep doing things, right? He's a tremendous example to all of us, and this is why we should have life extension so we can be like Buzz, I want people to have the opportunity in their late 80s to go to the South Pole. It's a shame that we run out of time to do things we'd like to do in our lives. And that's what happens to a lot of people. They think about doing something all their life and then, it's over. So I was really pleased to see this piece in Reason.com, a libertarian website. Aging is a disease and it's time to cure it by Ronald Bailey. What do you think of this piece, Stephen?
Well, I completely agree with the sentiment.
You know, well, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's it is a disease. I mean, it's a progressive disease that every person has. Well, I guess it could be argued that below a certain age, you don't have it. Because, I mean, I would say up until you're about 20 years of age, your body is able to, is regenerating all the time. You don't, and only the, you know, once you pass 20 and especially 30, you begin to have some degeneration, and it accelerates as you get older. You know, I mean, it's, you know, the 10 years that you age between, say, age 20 and 30 is nothing compared to the 10 years you age between 50 and 60. Right. So,
well, exactly. Let me tell you, once you hit 50, I people kept saying this, and I was like, not me. But man, once you hit 50, it all starts falling apart. And I mean, and I don't mean that in a, you know, that's inevitable. It just, a lot of people experience that, right? It's like there's this, you know, you reach this point.
It's like you've hit the warranty, right? I mean, you just,
Suddenly things you've never had to worry about are big problems, right? Big issues. And then you've got problems that you never had that old people get. And you're like, oh, really? Arthritis? I got arthritis. Oh, geez. Oh. You know, and you're dealing with that stuff. I think it was in this article, but I might have read it someplace else, but it really sums up the idea. I guess Dick Cavett, talk show host years ago, was talking about getting older. And he said, you know, I don't feel like an old person. I feel like a young person, and there's something wrong with me. Right?
Yeah.
And that's how we all feel, you know? It's like, well, I don't feel like I'm old. I feel like, what the hell's wrong with my body, right? Why is it behaving this way? And that's a disease, okay? That's an illness.
There's a scene in one of my wife's favorite movies, A Mirror Has Two Faces. Lauren Bacall is talking to her on-screen daughter, which is Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Streisand, yeah.
Right. And she says,
"Hey, I know,
you know
my chick flicks, bud. Okay."
Yeah. I mean, if you're married, if you're a married man, you know this movie because
if you like Jeff Bridges, you know, I mean, so
yeah.
But go ahead.
And he's cool. It's a good. And by the way, as far as chick flicks go, this one's very tolerable, guys. So if you feel the need to watch a chick flick with your significant other, this is one that's very tolerable. Anyway,
yeah. If you want bonus, this is the one. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Lauren Bacall is talking to her daughter Barbara Streisand in this movie, and she says, "You know, inside, I still feel like, you know, I'm 20 years old. I mean, it's, you know, I'm the same person in here,
right.
But you know, on the outside, you know, I'm not. I'm in the final stretch, and but it's, you know, the person, it hasn't changed. I'm just." You know, I'm the same person I always was, but dealing with all this crap, you know, I mean, I guess that's what she's saying. She said it much better and more succinctly, but that's what she was saying. And, and very much like Dick Cavett was saying, right? So,
yeah,
it's,
you know, it's not inevitable that we have to say, well, it's just part of life and you got to go with it. If anything else was doing this to people, we'd say that's a disease. We got to do something about this, right?
Right.
If anything else treated people the way aging does, we would, you know, there would be, you know,
telethons
there'd be a telethon, exactly right. We, you know, there'd be fundraisers. There'd be a huge nonprofit, several of them, dedicated to this, and everyone would be concerned about it. But because we've been told it's the normal thing. That it has to happen, you get into this mindset that there's nothing we can do. So I'm really pleased to see more like mainstream venues, you know, media places. I mean, yeah, they're libertarian, but I mean, they're not known for being, you know, crazy futuristic people at Reason. So I'm really pleased to see them taking that stance. I think we're gonna turn a corner here in a few years where that's going to move towards becoming a mainstream position, and the sooner the better.
Yeah. Well, and as far as the ability to take an old organism and make it young again, you know, we have a proof of concept, don't we? And in the sense that, you know, if people in their 40s have a child, it's not an old child. It's a brand new baby, just like any other baby, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
And so, we don't. You would think, well, you know, what's going on in our own bodies, the accumulation of all this crud would be passed on to the next generation. Well, it's not. There's a reset at that point. I contribute a cell, and my wife contributes a cell, and here comes a baby, and it's brand new. You know, it doesn't have the aging that we already have. So it seems to me that if biology can do that, then there ought to be ways to address aging in people. But I'm oversimplifying, I'm sure.
That's okay. Well, since we don't have time to solve the problem, we'll agree that this is an augmentation that is turning the corner, I think, in the public perspective, and I think that's important. Here's one that'll take longer to turn the corner, I betcha.
Okay.
But you saw this story, a dose of a hallucinogen from a magic mushroom and then lasting peace. Great story, really interesting story about how people with chronic severe depression and anxiety can totally trip out one time on mushrooms, right? And their lives get significantly better. I don't know how you
pronounce it. Well, it's interesting. It's
psilocybin. I'm not sure how you say it, but it's this active chemical.
I think it's psilocybin. I think.
Okay.
But I read, it was probably 2 or 3 years ago, Phil, a study on the use of LSD in people with end-of-life anxiety. Okay.
Right.
Somebody dying of cancer or something like that, given a dose of LSD, having a single trip, right? I mean, and then be at peace for the remainder of their days, and have the anxiety of, I'm dying, removed so that they can enjoy the last few days they have. That's remarkable. And apparently this magic mushroom chemical does the same. I guess it's just a class of drugs that would be called hallucinogens that seem to be able to do something about anxiety.
Right, and they are illegal and stigmatized.
Yes.
Because they're dangerous. But also I think the stigma is in part because, you know, these are viewed as strictly recreational drugs.
Yeah.
And it's viewed that there is no actual medical benefit to anybody taking these things. But the research continues, and it turns out once in a while, in some instances, there is significant medical benefit, testable, verifiable, reproducible medical benefit from taking LSD or mushrooms. It does make me wonder, because, I've not had these hallucinogenic experiences, but, what would it do for a normal person, right? I mean, would it just be a boost, or would it be?
Well, you know,
no,
it's
change,
interesting.
Right?
Steve Jobs, when he was in college, he dropped acid, quite a bit apparently, and
yeah.
He always, whenever he talked to young people, he would ask, anybody in here drop acid ever? And he always seemed to be disappointed that there was nobody in there. Kids these days, oh my gosh, no one's dropping acid,
Right, yeah, yeah.
What is this world coming to? Well, I think it was such a formative experience for him.
Yeah.
That it changed the way he looked at the world. He did it a few times when he was young and then didn't do it again.
Right.
But it apparently changed his whole outlook on things. And so he felt it was something that was a formative experience in his life, apparently. So, I guess for those who have done it, it almost takes on a religious context, a religious experience.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there is probably tremendous benefit from not only these substances, but new versions of them, new ways of getting at, you know, those parts of the brain that we're going to be seeing in years to come. And this is going to be part of the whole augmentation landscape. But there is a lot of stigma that will have to be overcome to get us there.
Yeah.
I think that's the short one. Now here's one that just was fascinating to me. Man cured a prostate cancer after doctor shocked tumor to death with testosterone. If you've ever known anyone with prostate cancer, you know that the big enemy in the case of prostate cancer is testosterone.
And one of the things they do for these patients is give them drugs to reduce their testosterone, right?
To reduce their testosterone. And boy, what comes along with that? Well, loss of well-being, your bones get brittle, you get, you know, you got no libido, you got no, I mean, it, just all the stuff
and
associated with
to be a delicate, you man breasts, everything. I mean, it's the whole.
Yeah, the whole deal. So,
yeah, it's not a good deal.
No, it's a bad deal any way you look at it. And turns out, whereas a little testosterone feeds the beast, a mega dose of testosterone does no real harm to the patient, but totally kills the cancer. Completely unexpected result. And it, to me, this, I mean, it's wonderful news. And, you know, I hope they keep trying this and this turns out to be something, because they got to do something about prostate cancer. There are better treatments today than there were a few years ago, and there were better treatments a few years ago than there were a couple decades ago. But this is still, you know, it's ridiculous how much suffering is caused by prostate cancer. It would be great if this turned out to be you can flip the switch and it's gone. But it's also just a great object lesson that the changes we're looking for are going to come from completely unexpected directions in some cases.
Well, speaking of unexpected directions, Phil, I mean, how about IBM giving us the means to combat all viruses?
Exactly where I was going. Yeah. Oh, you know, IBM, they just cured all viruses. What? You mean computer viruses? No.
No, people viruses.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
How's that work? What's going on there?
Well, I mean, it's what they do. You know, that, you know, when you're looking at viruses and things like that, you want to see what makes a virus different from the system in which it operates, right? You want to, if you're going to attack it, you want to be able to attack it in such a way that you're not harming the host,
right?
Correct. So, and that's what they did basically is they came up with a macro molecule. That hits viruses apparently where they live, right? I mean, it's
well. What's brilliant about this is, you know, you think, well, viruses, what do they got? Well, they're just these little strands of RNA, DNA, right? So you go in there and you hit the DNA. But the problem is, every virus has its own DNA. So there's no like one cure all to viruses if you go about it that way. So they looked at viruses and said, well, what else? What do all viruses have in common? And they found this adhesive, this protein that they use to stick to cells. And they said, you know what? We'll just take that away. Well, we're going to create a molecule that draws virus.
Well, the other problem is, you know, if you just attack DNA and RNA, well, that's in all of our cells, and we need that.
That's right. There's all kinds of risk there. Here's just this stuff that only viruses have that helps them do their job. You take it away from them, and everybody's happy, right? I mean, it's a brilliant engineering of the variety we're used to from IBM, but just in a in a really unexpected place, that's for sure. So that's I look forward to the day that I am completely virus-proof, and I will gladly thank IBM for that every day of my life.
I'll wear blue the rest of my life. If
happily do that, yes, for that augmentation. Well, that's it. You know, we've run out of time.
Yeah.
There's a lot more we could say both about these augmentations and about the controversies that surround them, but hopefully we gave at least a taste of the kinds of issues that we're up against, but some pretty encouraging directions there, and some hard work yet to do. We're going to be back again on Friday with a brand new show. Stephen, it's been great talking with you. It's been great being with you all. And until next time, live to see it.